Hi, my name is Ephraim, and this year at the Keswick Bible Convention, I'm unpacking the theme human in the context of our two Bible readings. Socrates once said, "Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle." We don't need to be a great philosopher to understand that life can be hard. In fact, life is very often very hard. Hardship and struggle seem to be a fundamental part of what it means to be human. I'm the Deputy CEO and Director of Training and Mentoring at London City Mission. And we work with people who go through some of the harshest experiences that life can throw at anyone. Take Joseph, for example. He lost his long-term partner of 35 years and through loneliness fell into addictions and subsequent years of homelessness. Unfortunately, Joseph's experience is quite common among those experiencing homelessness. Those who experience long-term homelessness have a reduced life expectancy, merely into their mid-40s. And during his time on the streets, Joseph said he saw people stabbed and heard of other rough sleepers being set on fire. At times, he slept in an old phone box just to feel safe. 1 in 10 rough sleepers have been urinated on by a member of the public, and a third have been kicked without provocation. Such treatment is a tragic injustice, as if their lives aren't hard enough. The reality is, tough times are indiscriminate. Everyone goes through them to a lesser or greater extent. Sometimes we are mere victims of circumstance, like when someone's world caves in at a given cancer diagnosis, or when a mother endures the soul-wrenching pain of a miscarriage. At other times, we fall foul of our own weaknesses, such as when we fail to regulate our anger and say and do hurtful things, maybe even alienating ourselves from the ones we love the most. Then there are those times when we are prey to the treacherous and merciless, those who would steal our identity and empty our bank accounts without an ounce of consideration for the impact of their crimes. Why do we go through such struggles? Why is life sometimes so hard? Why do we go through such pain? Why isn't humanity good enough to eliminate pain and suffering or crime or harsh circumstances from our human experience? These are the questions that filled my mind in 2018 as I stood over the grave of one of the students I had worked with. Having led the funeral, I was racked with deep questions. How is it this fun-loving 15-year-old who I had seen week in and week out could have his life so brutally cut short for being in the wrong place at the wrong time? As I explored those big questions, I found that the contents of the Bible proved to make a lot of sense in the stark coldness of the dark night of my soul. As a Christian and a minister at that, I was very familiar with the Bible's origin story. To me, it makes sense that this beautiful world, with all its joys, delights, and intricacies, is an intentional expression of an intelligent, loving maker. It is entirely reasonable to me that from this we can conceive a being who is infinitely powerful and knowledgeable beyond our human capacity to comprehend. For me, there is coherence in the reality reflected in the Judeo-Christian origin story, which is the setting of our reading. As the late Christian apologist and author Dr. Timothy Keller quotes in his book, The Reason for God, "Belief in God offers a better empirical fit. It explains and accounts for what we see better than the alternative account of things." Having created the cosmos, declaring 6 times in Genesis 1 that it is good, God created humanity, the pinnacle of his creation, at which he declares them to be very good. But by chapter 3 of Genesis, we read of Adam and Eve giving in to temptation only to disobey God by eating the fruit from the one solitary tree of all the trees in the world that God told them not to. When I avoid the distraction of the talking snake imagery to focus on the meaning being conveyed, I see what feels like a very familiar picture of our human experience. A battle for autonomy. God had given Adam and Eve almost total freedom, but this clearly wasn't enough for them. They didn't like being told no to something they wanted, something they felt they deserved. At the point the first humans assumed total autonomy and leveraged absolute freedom, suffering entered our human experience. Here, as William Shakespeare once wrote, is the way to dusty death. Death, conflict, and even environmental corruption. By usurping the creator, they introduce corruption into the creation. The Canadian theologian, Dr. Don Carson, puts it like this: Adam and Eve endeavored to de-God God. The act of defiance and the corruption that followed is called sin in the Bible. And according to our first reading, it corrupted not only our humanity, but the whole created order. This is why there is suffering, sickness, and pain. Why there is global warming and natural disasters. The reverberations of the human coup against God run to the deepest core of our existence. Every facet has been scorched, root and branch. This is why it has been said that the heart of the human problem is the problem with the human heart. We are told later in the Bible, in Paul's letter to the Romans, that when humans reject God's authority, he gives us what we want. And suffering is the result. So despite the fact it may feel like we live in a God-forsaken world, we are actually living in a world that has forsaken God. But God refused to leave us alone. He chose to send a rescuer. God took on the nature of humanity and lived among us. The name of that man is Jesus. Not only did God live among us, but he even participated in our human suffering. In this, he demonstrated the greatness of his love for people, his most precious creation. Millennia after Adam and Eve in the garden of creation, Jesus is described in another garden. In chapter 26 of the Gospel according to Matthew, the reading we heard earlier, we meet Jesus in the garden of Gethsemane, not seeking to assert his autonomy, but rather totally and utterly surrendering it. He is so agonizingly challenged as he does this that it is recorded his sweat was like drops of blood, a very rare condition called hematohidrosis. Jesus was deeply stressed at the knowledge of the suffering he was about to experience. He was about to face the very worst form of capital punishment, probably the worst ever invented, crucifixion. The prophet Isaiah had previously spoken that the rescuer would come and suffer the outpouring of God's justice towards sin. Sin brought suffering, and through the suffering of the divine man, sin would be cancelled. Adam and Eve lit the metaphorical fuse, causing ongoing explosions of sin throughout human history. And yet Jesus absorbs the explosions, extinguishing them with the giving of his very own life. Jesus is the one who makes sense of all the suffering, pain, and dissatisfaction in my life. It is his selfless, sinless, and sacrificial participation in human suffering that has captured my heart. But the significance of Jesus doesn't end there. The greatest reason Jesus makes sense of all suffering and hardship in life is because after he suffered, he came back from the dead in victory, proving his power over sin and triumph over all suffering. With this, he extends the promise of a new creation free of suffering, but for sin. The previously mentioned author, Tim Keller, gleans from the philosophy of Soren Kierkegaard this definition of sin: the despairing refusal to find your deepest identity in your relationship with and service to God. Sin is seeking to become oneself, to get an identity apart from Him. This is the autonomy of the fallen. Jesus offers true freedom and the expectation of a time when there will be no more suffering to all who would totally trust and surrender their autonomy to Him. It is the undeniable experience of countless Christians throughout history that through their faith in Jesus, their experience of even the worst suffering can be utterly transformed. No one actually seeks suffering, and neither did Christ. But through sickness, war, persecution, these and other such trials become a herald of better yet to come.